We'll call the workshop for the planning commission for September 26th to order. Do you have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Butler.
Present.
Vice Chair Morris.
Here.
Commissioner Lewis. Commissioner Einstein.
Here.
Commissioner Bradford.
Here.
Commissioner Tingle.
Here.
Commissioner Wiggins.
Here.
Thank you. Public comment, the public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the planning commission, including any matters that are not specifically included on the agenda for action. Sir, public comment at this time?
Mr. Chairman, Maxine Beats is in the audience. Hi, Maxine. She's here to check in and see what we're doing. And I think, today we're going to be on the agenda going over 1805 specifically, as well as on the agenda talking about future sections that you want to review. Is there anything, Maxine, you might want to say outside of that at this point, or do you want to just observe? And I think if it's okay, if she has any comments during as we go through this section today.
D1 for discussion only regarding possible amendments to private city municipal code CCMC titling.
Some kind of talking about accessory structures and some other things that we want to do. Just to back up, for Maxine and the record, we started our plan, kind of this initial go around through the Title 18 code is mainly to familiarize the planning commission with the background of the planning commission doesn't deal with every aspect of Title 18 on a monthly basis, or even in a given year, you might not see anything that's in Title 18 that touches you, but you have to task for the next year or two to do a review of Title 18. Title 17 should be going into that discussion too, the subdivision regulations and the development standards. So the first part is really going to be familiar, I said, with how it operates. So we can go back and actually start to make some amendments. As applicable, as we're having these workshops, we're taking comments on some, pointing out some of the obvious things that have been, especially the things that have been discussed over time when we want to make changes accessory structures has actually come up in discussion about those regulations. And it's going to be a long process before we go back and go out and have real public workshops. This isn't over the next time, but I think it's really the next year sometime. Section that we need to include in some places where it's not in the development standards, I think in particular, to specify the applicability. But these general standards apply to all zoning districts. As I noted in the staff report, too, it also makes the statement that, for you all to remember, there's Title 18 and then there's the appendix that's the development standards. And generally speaking, the process-oriented standards are Title 18 and the design-oriented standards are the development standards. And this says that. Any other questions on applicability? That comment ties a poor example about the design standards being the development standards. The second section is parking. So whereas in the old times the parking standards were contained in 18, they are now contained in Provision 2 of So this states that.
I wonder if what you meant, if it's referring to a land use district instead of zoning.
Zoning district, no.
I was just reading to see. What I just commented on, and Max, I don't think you read what I'm reading, because I started reading to try to understand. I'm reading from 1805, and it references land use districts. I think it means zoning districts.
Yeah.
It says it's a copy of
now to be found or are now in the development standards.
So there still needs to be a reference to it in the title 18.
By paragraph or just by.
Yeah, you're right. Not necessarily.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if 18.05.001 or 009 says, you know, parking, trash, and refuge, and other, or whatever we, however we want to say it, are now located in.
Are detailed
in the development standards.
Yeah, we might be able to eliminate them because what the reference in Title 18 to the development standards is here. This is chapter 18.16, which all chapter 18.16 says is that the design specifications are in the attached.
See, if we're trying to make this more user friendly, you know, I just don't want us to rewrite everything and just make it twice as big.
I think we made sure
we got all the references in there.
So noted for.
So if it's not covered in the development standards, it would be possibly covered in more detail here.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about consolidated reference.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That will apply.
See, that applies to all of these things.
Yeah.
So too many of them.
Yeah. Well, granted, too many of them.
Is that T-O-O?
It applies to landscaping, yes. The same thing, that has a whole chapter in the development standards. Both parking and landscaping have entire chapters. Trash, refuse, and recycled material storage. This is the code section that requires them in all non-single family developments. So.
But do the development standards get more specific about the design of the storage facility?
Yes, they do.
So maybe that should be kind of referenced there, or all of this moved to the development.
Yeah, experience. No, I think, again, when we review the development standards, there'll be some things that we would like to fix in that section.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, but if we've got cross references everywhere, then we're going to forget one. We're going to miss one. And somebody's going to play. So, if we can find a way to make all these as a reference, go to the development standards where they're defined and explained, I think it makes this document, or this first section I'm talking about, a lot easier to use.
Yeah. Like, we'll work with the DA if we do that. These are probably not necessary because they are actually contained where it says they're contained. So.
It's just a general description, and then you go to for more detail. Right. I'm looking for that. Well, here it is, but it says it's over here, and you go.
Yeah.
Although one of you was just pointing out 18.05.015, that's actually a really important sentence because when you get to the design standards, it tells you how to design your trash enclosure.
But this says
this tells you you actually have to make provisions. We have folks in town who do not want to make provisions for trash.
Obviously, we had one last night.
That's true. It says it's required, and then there are standards.
Right, but the same thing applies to parking standards too. That your design standard are in.
Yeah, that's true.
You're saying you have to have the parking.
Yeah.
And then you have to go to the design standards to figure out
what
the
parking, right.
What the design is. Yeah.
Is there a reason why that has to be that way? Is it just for simplicity's sake? I'm just wondering why it wouldn't be just so much easier to have just one place.
Just say everything's in the development standard?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are the development standards.
Someplace, one place.
The development standard could be more robust, but I just, if I was trying to build something, I would have never found 18.05.015, but I would know that I would, if I was trying to build something and I'm in the development standards and I come to trash,
yeah,
then I know what I have to do.
Yeah. No, that's not how we use it either. We don't go and find things.
Well, so then why are we doing it? Take good notes.
It's almost like hitting six links to get where you want to be when you're looking or searching for something.
Yeah, these are important. They are important statements. I don't know that they have to be in a separate section from all the other parking standards, so that for parking, trash, landscaping.
Well, you have that is parking, and then right below is a development standard for parking. Make your statement and have it right below.
Right. One place.
Okay.
Temporary construction containers. So this so many of these standards really tie to development standards because anything.
Need mentions the ordinance.
Because the metal storage containers is a separate section also in the development standards.
Well,
I think it's worked pretty well. This is an exemption in here, but even within the section, as I'm going to get to later, I think things were put in, but they're not necessarily grouped right. So it would seem like everything regarding storage containers should be in the same location. I don't think there's any changes.
Let me ask another question. What was the purpose of Section 18.05 general provisions? Because almost everything that's in general provisions is, yeah, everything that's in there is now in one way or another in the development standard. It would seem to me.
I don't think accessory.
All right, so the purpose of Chapter 18.05 General Provisions is to talk about things that are the exception, not the rule.
Well, you get into
you often in zoning ordinances see this stuff referred to as supplemental standards. So when you have your zoning district, you have your dimensional criteria, setbacks, building height, all that good stuff, and how you can use your land. Then we have a whole nother set of rules that aren't the dimensional criteria and aren't how you can use your land. They're supplemental standards. In our code, we call them general provisions. And it's a very standard chapter to have. So that's my comment.
Okay. But it's almost like what we did before when we're looking at the chart.
The definitions.
And the definitions. I mean, why would watchman quarters, heliports, and home occupations? You know, and I don't know that there's a better place to put it, but it seems like all we're listing are the exceptions to the rule or special cases. So if they're special cases, they're not general provisions.
Landscaping, parking are general provisions.
Yes, but they're all in the development standard.
This is an important, this is the section that allows metal storage containers for construction sites.
Good.
So it's an important one. Maybe it could be grouped in the other thing all about storage containers, but it is an important.
Okay. I give up.
Is this relative to code enforcement? I mean, is it for these or code enforcement or?
No, the organization. I think the question went back to why does this section exist? I mean, it's an amendment in 2002 to the old code that was structured a little bit differently, but trying to make it kind of be the same.
So if we're going to rewrite this.
But again, there's no real rhyme or reason to it. It's not alphabetized. I mean, if you're looking for something, you have to go and look at all of them to find what you want, because you've got watchman quarters, following parking, trash, landscaping. I mean, what, I guess just, there'd be an index that would refer you to a page, but I mean, when they put this together, it's not like it goes from mobile home to stick home to whatever.
Commercial or residential.
Right, it's just all hodgepodged in together.
Yeah, and I think it's because these were the sections that were in place previously, so.
And the same numbers, so they just use the same numbers.
And I think the DA's, the way they're going to do this is probably, this is going to be so much change, this is going to be deleted its entirety and do a totally new document, is how I think we've discussed that.
Yeah, because Watchman's Tower should be back with wind energy. Whatever, I don't know. It just.
But in terms of the regulation, temporary construction containers, I think that's important. Is there anybody have?
Well, I don't think anybody's disagreeing with anything that's in here. It's just where it's located.
Yes.
And how it's referenced.
So, okay, so we decided that that's probably going to all be redone or whatever, but we still want to go to the material in it to see if we want to change what's under it more. We got some crap in the same with definitions. So we spent more time on the title rather than.
If I'm building something, or if I want to remodel, or if I want to build, I'm going to go to general permissions, period. I'm going to go there. And if this stuff is not referenced, I'm going to go, where did this come from? I'm going to be spending all my time marking this darn book for parking here, parking here, parking here. Oh, yeah, now my trash is here, and trash is here, and this is temporary, and this is temporary. Aren't we trying to bring it into one cohesive thing?
Well, I would say,
Yeah,
to make it easier, which would be to go to the table, is my use permitted, go to the development standards, what do I do to build it?
Right?
Applicability, and you go to the development standards, okay, this is applicable to commercial and multifamily, and okay, I'm going to go through those standards. Get to the next section, this is applicable to all zoning districts, go through those.
Right.
That's where we're
going to
get to.
Like and in the development standards, there can be a section for hill, of course.
These things are going to be cared for, but I want to go through to make sure we're okay with the provisions.
What's
in here.
The information that's under?
Yeah.
Okay, the DA's office will take care of the organization. They're looking to us, do we want to change some of the
information?
Do they want to change some of the information that's in it or the restrictions or the whatever?
They'll codify it.
Right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay, so getting to 1805030, which is trailers, mobile homes, recreational vehicles, commercial coaches, and storage containers.
How about coach houses?
Coach houses, RVs, okay.
It's in there too.
I kind of have a description in there. I think this is one that I also really think, you know, is needs to be reorganized even within itself. Because mobile home, I use the term mobile home, they use the term mobile home. It's definition is the same as a manufactured home. Manufactured home should probably be the term that's used.
Isn't it legally called a HUD home?
No. A manufactured home is the term that HUD uses.
Okay, sure.
And that means it meets that manufactured home.
And I would agree with that.
So I don't want to. We'll catch all of that through the whole thing in a rewrite. But so, and anytime I say mobile home or manufactured home, they are quite interchangeable, even in the definition in this code. So. Mobile homes. I think mobile homes, the old term, that's a carryover. Just noting in paragraph 2 here, it starts with mobile home, then jumps into recreational vehicle and these exceptions. I would suggest, you know, the mobile home reference needs to actually be in paragraph 4 when we talk about what a mobile home needs to be used for. So that's just a little organizational thing.
I have a question about the first comment you made on here.
Okay. prohibits the use of air DI. So I think, and this first, so paragraph one. So your comments on paragraph one.
Yeah.
This is kind of the section, I think we want to look at it, and maybe it could use some modernization, but this is the thing that prevents somebody from parking their semi-truck trailer or other moving thing and using it as storage.
But my question is, you say in residential zoning districts, does that include the historical district?
And it prohibits the vehicles from being stored. So this is two things. It prevents certain types of vehicles from being used for storage. In other words, park the thing and stuff with stuff. And also for parking in these types of commercial vehicles in residential zone districts is B. So this is why the truck drivers can't park their semi-trucks.
My question is, does all residential zoning districts include the historical district?
Most of the historic district. It depends on the base zoning. So the historic district is an overlay zoning. This historic district is not a residential or non-residential district per se.
Okay.
It's an overlay.
And then I guess my question is, would we like that to be applicable to the historical district in total?
The historic district includes the Capitol building and other commercial places.
Yeah, but it goes all the way up to Division Street. And like today I drove down Division and Spear, and there's a motorhome with a pop out and a couple of motorcycles, and they're like living there. And so, you know, watching this, okay, that's interesting. Because it's just on a regular city street in between Nevada and Division.
Or 1A, where there's a Airstream.
I don't think you need it in the historic district. The reason being, you're going to have one of two things happening. One, it's on wheels and movable, which means it's not going to be subject to it's not going to be treated like a permanent structure. Or it's not movable, it's treated like a permanent structure, and it's not going to meet the guidelines for the historic district.
Okay. All right. You win.
Next thing you
need. Quick question, 1B. Tents, we're not referring to the little kind of tents that the kids put up in the backyard for their little sleep outs.
Tents.
Are there tent trailers?
Teepees. No, I'm serious. I'm very serious about that.
Or one of those canvas enclosures that you put up in your driveway and put your car under it.
Absolutely.
This, you know, but it's under the section that's saying
storage.
That's about storage and buses and using things, so it's about storage. It's not saying that you can't have a tent.
So it's basically referring you can't be sleeping or living in
it. I don't know what a tent refers to.
But again, 1A, if you're talking about in any use district.
But a tent trailer, if it's a tent trailer, that would fall under the definition of recreational vehicle, and you wouldn't need to say it. We'll flag that.
I guess my other question would be, how do you know somebody's got an RV park next to their driveway, whether they're using it for storage or just, you know, going to move it every once in a while to go camping.
Or park on the street.
Yeah.
Because a teenager in it.
Right.
Or park on the lot by your
I'm not saying we should get rid of that prohibition, but I'm just saying, you've got to have some, if you're going
to
put this stuff in the code, you've got to have some enforcement capacity. And so.
Yeah, I think the recreation or occupied for living purposes in any district, which is not true when you do the recreational vehicle, because they are permitted as 2B says in RV parks and wherever else they're
Again, it comes back to what's the purpose of the paragraph? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about people using vehicles as storage containers, or are we talking about people living in their RV on public street?
In A, it's about storage.
Which is two different
things. Except for that, it says, or occupied for living purposes in any.
It says both things.
Yeah. So I think that's right. You need to be separated out because you don't want somebody stuffing an unregistered RV as stupid, using that as a storage container in their driveway. But we still have to have provision that they can't, that all these things can't be used for.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I'm just talking about, here's another paragraph.
I would take RVs should be taken out and be whatever the regulations are along there for recreational vehicles.
And again, what's the enforcement on this? Is it through a complaint to code enforcement?
That's typically how they've been enforced. Yeah, can we get it? No, we did. That's done.
Comes up by the loads and that sort of
Okay, so we want to clarify that these types of rolling stock can be used for storage, and then something also that they can't be parked in these types of commercial vehicles can't be parked in residential zoning districts.
I would think we need a paragraph for storage containers by itself.
And this belongs with storage containers. And we already talked about other. There's already something else. This is another one that goes with storage containers.
And then right. The trailers, mobile home, recreational vehicles, and commercial coaches. We're talking about occupancy, not necessarily storage. So.
If storage is on wheels. Like a U-Haul truck.
Park my 40-year-old Winnebago under a canvas tent in my front driveway and sell ice cream out of it.
I'll do the tacos.
Do we have big streetcar bodies problem in our town?
Yeah. There's one in Lakeview, that's the only one I know, which is there, and probably it's quite possible that somebody didn't like that and they wrote an ordinance to say we can't use boxcars.
Different like containers is what they're talking about with boxcars as containers.
Yeah.
Like
the one
with
the corner
How many trains are
in boxcars?
Train, comma, boxcars.
But it's not used as a.
It's train, comma, boxcars.
Storage, so it's okay.
Yeah, but why do we mention trains at all? It's trailers, mobile home parks, recreational vehicles, and commercial vehicles.
It's a grown party when I'm on the road.
No, and again, I think we're going to take us 1,000 hours to get through this if we keep going this rate. I'm not sure if we're clear on what we're trying to accomplish.
No, we do have to, right? I mean, it's good to make these notes that these need clarifications, because when we go back to rewrite it, we want to be sensitive and understand kind of these issues. So that's okay. You'd be surprised what people, if somebody is given a train for free, they're going to figure out how to put it in their backyard to store stuff.
A train?
Yeah. Well, you know, but in that case,
it should say engine, probably.
More power to it.
You've got the box car. You could have flat cars, engines, coal cars. I mean, do we have to describe
caboose?
A caboose. I can't get caboose.
Yeah.
Have a caboose.
There is one in somebody's residential district.
Yeah. Well, there's one in mine. Box car.
Okay.
So maybe what you do, Lee, is you talk about storage and then say that you prohibit storage in anything other than.
Yeah. This discussion makes more sense because we've already said that there's a storage sections in development standards. We talked about storage section, now we're talking about storage again. This all needs to be in the same place.
Yeah.
Which is the note I made too. Yeah. We need to find all these storage things to get them into the same
one place.
Yeah. All right, moving on. I noted that this paragraph and kind of statement needs to be combined with full paragraph 4 that talks about mobile homes.
Mobile homes.
Actually,
permitted uses for mobile homes.
Yeah.
So maybe change paragraph 2 to mobile homes. May be used, and then you just list all of these.
Well, actually, paragraph 4 it says a mobile home may be used, and that could be reworded, but I think this goes there because 2 should be a recreational vehicle may be used.
Yeah.
Which is the next part there. So this is where it says an RV can be used only in an RV park. And so you can't sleep, can't live them in your driveway or other places on the street.
What about tiny homes?
No, what?
Tiny homes.
Vehicles have wheels.
Tiny homes or RVs?
Because over there coming up by Lowe's, as we've talked about, there's a tiny home and sitting, it was in the yard,
it's an
now
RV.
It's sitting on the driveway, and they're all hooked up and they're living in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually had complaints on that. They're not living in it as far as we can tell. I know if they're working in there. It's legally parked as an RV.
Gotcha.
It's on the side of the house now. It wasn't in the front yard.
It was in the yard. Now they moved it just to the side of the driveway. But usually they'll have their fire pit going. About 15 people sitting around it out there.
It used to be in the front yard.
Well, it was. Now the fire pit's there because there's usually 10 people sitting around their fire pit in the evening.
It's
Silver City.
Silver
City.
Let's see. So.
We know all these things, which is really interesting.
So there's also this long page-long exception and process for an exception to being able to live in your RV in the front yard for a person who can document it as an income subject to all these conditions. This code section was written for one person that had that and used it and got that approval, and that's long gone, and we haven't had a request for it since.
So it should probably be removed.
What do y'all think about an exception for?
Or we just take it out and wait for the next one to come.
Well, then you've got to go back through the process of changing the zoning code to allow it.
But we amended the code for reasonable accommodation.
Oh, that's right.
So I think you can't get rid of this because you could utilize the provisions of reasonable accommodation to try to accommodate.
Is that a planning commission process?
No, it's you. You have the discretion.
That's giving me a lot of power.
We did it in Lyon County. We did the same thing. We had to do the same thing in Lyon County. We basically did this, but we gave the authority for approval to the planning director.
I feel like if something came up based on...
It could be covered elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you need to have the criteria for when somebody can do it, but the decision-making... It could just be an administrative.
Right. And that's the way it's set up under that other section.
Right, because it's just it's a private thing of somebody's health. You don't want to hear it in public.
I think this requires a special use permit. Is this correct? This is
correct.
So, yeah, it looks like we have the same thing you have.
But maybe that should be in a separate section. So that somebody comes in with a complaint or with a special request to the planning department and says, I've got an infirm mother, I need to take care of her. Is there anything I can do? And then you could refer to the section rather than...
But it could be Hope's section under the other.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
We could look at reasonable accommodation.
have another storage container paragraph. So we know to combine all storage, all things storage in one area.
You have a comment on that.
Which is interestingly kind of in the middle of the next paragraph that says that relates to RVs again.
This one says only allowed in industrial districts. We just approved containers in a public.
That's right. That is not even true, Steve. They are permitted by. Right, special use permitted in commercial districts. They're allowed by right in industrial districts. And subject to Division 1.
Are they permitted in public district? Yeah. Public zoning district.
You just did it before.
I know we did. Yeah. But does it say that in here? It says a storage container or other similar enclosure is only allowed in the industrial district.
And there's other provisions that say what permit is required. So this is actually, when we look at the development standards, I think it actually says when it's permitted, the director can approve an industrial district, or it's a special use permitted commercial, and we should add public there. If it's not there, you don't need
it. You either don't need it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or in this case, to say it right, if this is how you're. Yeah.
And is it
and is it parking, parking lots are not considered an RV
parking.
I don't know that you need it. There's a lot of things. I don't know. RV park is defined. You probably don't even need to say that a parking lot is not an RV park. Neither is a city street. Neither is a single-family residential lot. Neither is a lot.
Well, what you're trying to say is overnight parking in a parking lot is not authorized. That's an enforcement problem, not a zoning problem.
Like if they put used cars on a major piece of land,
say
it's a used car lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they put
an
RV park.
Or I read somewhere an RV park is what, 3 RVs or something? You can call it an RV park, or I think when we were looking at one of these, it was a very. An RV park was described as having more than two or three spots for an RV. It's a park.
Sounds like an NRS. Or no, that might be, that's probably definition.
That was in definition, yeah.
Okay. Commercial coaches.
That seems like that needs to go somewhere else. Because where we define a commercial coach as a temporary office trailer.
Portable
for construction.
A lot of times there's other manufacturer homes they put out there just blocking.
Yeah, but I mean it's a construction office. Mm-hmm. So
it's a commercial trailer more than a coach.
I'm just saying it's in the wrong section.
Right.
If I'm a contractor and I want a temporary office, and it's a construction trailer, I'm certainly not going to find it in here.
It's under trailers.
No, it's under general provision trailers.
It's a temporary use. So maybe there are a lot of other temporary uses. Maybe have a section that includes all the temporary uses. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Commercial coaches now, does this have any relationship to the use of commercial coaches as temporary offices for special events?
We haven't had it for special events.
Rendezvous had one every year.
Who?
Rendezvous.
Ken Carson Rendezvous.
Okay. It looks like a mobile home half thing, but.
Like something that would be on a construction trailer is a rental thing.
Couldn't that be approved through the permitting process of the special
permit?
Yeah,
that would be added there.
And the subsection establishes when a coach may be used at special events. Would be permitted to start.
the point is, if I want to sell hot dogs at the Bad Day Parade, and I rented a commercial trailer, which is what this is, commercial coach, and put it on the street and sold hot dogs, I'd have to get a permit from the city.
Right. What do you do with this?
You get one from the Bad Day.
Which you could just open the window and sell it out.
But do we allow other things to be temporary uses?
Yeah, we have a temporary use permanent section.
And that's what this would reference.
So this is like food trucks, or what about food trucks?
Yeah, like the busboy.
And food trucks are regulated through the health code.
But they have a partner somewhere.
Yeah, they're the ones that have the time. They have the time and place regulations in there. Okay. Well, we'll think about.
Sure, Paul, if you let them do that, unless there was a complaint, there wouldn't be any said, so if you weren't looking right, I mean, I'm sure that happens quite often, that someone let somebody store something on their property.
Yeah, I'm just
I think the argument was, it was they had their RV and some friend's RV, and as a result, it intentionally says that for...
Okay, well, I did worse. I didn't know that, so...
All right. Watchman's quarters. So, and I remember, and so I looked it up. But I think Commissioner Quarters mentioned something about the caretaker's quarters. But watchman's quarters is this, and the term caretaker's quarters is only referenced in guest buildings. So as a caretaker of a house, so it's referenced there. It's not a use, whereas this is for the watchman's quarters, which we do get still occasionally in the industrial area or somewhere else, some commercial areas.
Would the guy that stays in his trailer at the Christmas tree park across from the Ormsby house, would that be a watchman's quarters?
That'd be a temporary office.
Yeah, that'd be a construction office.
You have to be observing it?
Yeah, well, he spends a night in it.
Right. I'm just usually have a nice fire going in the barrel and stuff. I mean, it's a nice money.
I'm not saying it isn't. I was just asking a question.
And what is it? It can be a manufactured home or site, a recreational vehicle. So they're not supposed to be a recreational vehicle on the site that they're staying in during that.
So what can a watchman's quarters be then?
Number six? Manufactured home or site-constructed home.
All right.
So you're saying...
So more permanent than temporary.
You're saying keep the section, but get rid of the requirement to review it every 2 years is the recommendation?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
In other words, you keep the description, but the...
Yeah, once you've got... I'm thinking of storage units where they have someone living on site. Is that the most probably common use for this? Like
yeah.
Storage yards?
You go out to Mound House, and in Mound House, there is, and that's what I'm seeing in the future here. I mean, Mound House, they have a lot of single wide and double wide mobiles that they probably, got for cheap and dumped them on the site. And they're putting them out there, and a lot of them are, they're charging rent for, and a lot of them are in disrepair. A lot of them are being just used for storage and just a bunch of crap.
Yeah, use your question. Who's using them? Who's using it?
No. A watchman's quarters most often would appear in our area for
industrial. Where they have stuff on site behind the fence.
Yeah, that Brunswick Canyon. You guys looked at that. Remember in our Mustache Show class here? They have a watchman's quarters.
And they can't live in it.
They live there.
The 24-hour storage facilities where you can go in at any time of the night.
Right, they live up above it, so that would be kind of like a watchman.
So I agree. I don't think you should be checking it every 2 years.
I mean, unless
what is the point of checking it once it's approved?
Yeah, especially if it's stick built. And I think if they're not, we can condition it and monitor it to when they.
Would you include in stick built? Would you include a modification to somebody's factory building where they, if you got enough overhead room to put a mezzanine level in, that they can then put a living quarters in?
Yeah, I think something like that's been done.
Yeah,
I know. That's kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's not there.
Unless it changes ownership or changes whatever, I mean that would be a time you would check it or whatever.
Right. We could still check it and
Or if you had a complaint on it, you should go check it. But I mean, I don't think you need to enforce it every 2 years. It would be something to limit.
Yeah, well, I think if you still have the quarters, maybe you require it to be removed any time without compliance with any conditions.
Right.
But
What kind of a permit do they get to do this?
It's a piece of paper. It's just written authorization to do it.
Okay. If on that written piece of paper it says that this permit is only
not
valid,
transferable.
Is non-transferable, it's only valid to this person.
Well, we would do that if perhaps if it's a mobile home or a manufactured home, but if it's still built, it's there for that property.
Well, I'm just trying to
place the conditions on it, and we have a, probably have them record. I don't know if it,
that's a good recording.
I
would say that if it transfers.
We've probably been inconsistent and sometimes require recording and sometimes not, but we have a record. If there's limitations, like we do with guest buildings, mm-hmm. and you record something on the property that says you have a guest building, but it's limited to guests, not being guest and family members only.
But I would think you may want to check it if it's even if it's a business. It transfers ownership, then you can reinforce this is what's allowed here.
Right. And we can, with our new permit system, we'll have the ability to do
right. But that would be the only time I would worry about going out or if I'm complaining or if it changes ownership.
I don't think we need to check it every 2 years, but I think you might check it every time it changes ownership.
Right. Right. That's what I would recommend.
Or a complaint.
Or a complaint.
Oh, well, always with a complaint.
But again, clarify changing owners. This is the required showing. This is the use. And they're going to say, well, you live up here. Or anyone can live up here. You're going in, there's 20 people. So this is what it's for. Okay, what was that? That was a quick one. That, of course, didn't take a whole long time anyway.
Heliport is actually in use. Remember seeing that in the use table.
Well, the hospital has.
So this requires special use. Kind of, so the first one says requires special use permit, which belongs in 1804. And the second one is the definition, which should have a definition. So perhaps this whole section.
We finally all agree.
So the hospital lead, when they added on that east wing and put the heliport on top, they even got a special use permit.
I think it was with the. I don't think it was with an addition. I think that was with the.
It was one east. Yeah, when we modified one east, I remember an ICU moved off the back end. That's where that heliport went initially. Anyway, but they came and would have had to get a special use permit.
Yeah. All right, we have home occupation standards. So these standards have worked pretty well. So basically it says you can have a business out of your home, but mostly, in summary, what this says is it's not a place where your customers can come. You can have it as an office. If you have a business and need to go out, you can go out there, you can have it as an office. And it's not a place for commercial storage. It's not a place where we have a lot of code enforcement cases is landscape businesses where all the employees meet there in the morning, so we're always tracking down some business and having them move somewhere else for their meeting location. But all of these requirements are intended to keep the general character of a residential neighborhood while you still can have your business office out there. Anybody have any questions on any of those?
Is the 20% arbitrary?
Yeah. What number are you looking at?
Number three.
Yeah, that's a tough one too. So
I had a home business.
I don't know. We're kind of unsure what that means sometimes too. Not recently, but I remember in the past, it's like, well, so I guess they're showing your office, you know, what are you using, but what does that mean?
With all these other requirements, what difference does it make?
Right.
How much of a home you use?
Well, see, mine was like 47%, because that's what I filed on my taxes. It was basically downstairs,
yeah.
And I lived upstairs.
See, and I had a computer table on the other side. in my real estate office in Washington, and I had to cut 47 feet off. That way, and said, yep, that's my son, and he's doing homework.
Well, sometimes I work at the kitchen table, sometimes I work at my desktop, and sometimes I work at my
laptop. Well, theoretically, then, if you're an accountant and someone comes to meet with you about doing your taxes at your house, you're not supposed to do that. Because it says...
That's right.
And that's, I mean, that's one where they tell us at the start where it is, but then there's another never. Yeah, that's totally interior. What if they meet all the other stuff, we don't see storage outside, and people aren't coming and going, but how spread out their quilts are in the house.
Where the artist too has canvases all over the place.
I don't know where that comes from. Hope just pointed out that real estate, anybody know as to why real estate, I mean, I can think why, is that those are typically businesses that people come to the house, but that's prohibited, so you wouldn't.
No, and I don't know why it's prohibited, because in Washington I have my real estate office in my house, the full-blown real estate office in my house, and it was in a very nice neighborhood because I had, good clients. But most of the time you go out and you meet your clients. So, and
but you
I
couldn't put out signage and stuff, right? For your, you couldn't paint a sign out in your
front. I had to put a sign. Had to put a sign that was this big on the outside of the entrance to that part of the house. It had to be a designated entrance. It had to be ADA compliant. Like you said, it was 47 feet too big because there was a standard like this 20% thing that I had to actually kind of put in the wall and had my son's computer on one side of the office because I wasn't going to take off 47 feet out of his house. So, but no, that's I had my office in there, and then we actually had a real estate agent that used their laundry room, and they actually had a real estate audit on their washer, and the auditor had to sit there in the laundry room and do it. So yeah, this is...
So signs aren't permitted here.
Right.
Okay, well, that's it, because you have to have some kind of signage for real estate.
Did your license report?
Yeah, now every one of our signs, they have to have our license numbers on.
That's probably why you can't do that.
That's why. I bet you that's why they have the attorney, too, but the tax person, no.
But, it just seems like those are businesses that really don't disrupt the residential character of a neighborhood. Do we want to specify that those are not allowed, or just say, your business can't disrupt the residential character of the neighborhood?
Well, I'd be a little upset if they put in a landscaper or legal office next door, and all of a sudden they're blocking my driveway, cars everywhere.
No, see, that was
right. But if you say that you're if you have requirements that say you can't have more than X number of visitors or
And your space is only so big, so you're not going to have a whole bunch of people in there. And that was what the determination was with us, is I could have myself and my two staff members, period. And there was a small area.
So there's three parking places.
I had a big lot.
My neighbor,
right,
and they've got a two-car garage, and they're going to upstairs put a real estate office in up there, and there's already five cars parked there for the people that live there. I wouldn't like it.
You still have to work with like your HOAs and stuff like this. But then why can't I have a real estate office, but somebody else could go ahead and have an assisted care living in a whole building and have eight patients in a place, plus the CNAs and all of that?
Because state law says you have. It says they can.
This law says they can't. Well, this law says we can't, but why not? I mean, that's why I would like to know.
This is a big deal. We get complaints all the time about people visiting houses and where businesses and houses. This is, I think this is a controversial issue.
So what would be best for planning and staff? Want to enlarge it any more than it already is.
We're not going to count how many visitors come to a house in a day, I can tell you that. it's either you can do it or you can't. You can have people come to your house or you can't.
Because I know several accountants that are buddies that I know that you go over there and you want to pick up or bring your tax information, well, theoretically, you shouldn't be doing that.
Theoretically, you shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. But no, to put out the real estate, people have the attorneys that you just...
But again, if there's no complaints, you don't do anything about it. But you do get
complaints. But we won't issue the business license. So yeah, I'm thinking
that's
along
the right
the
now,
lines.
We don't issue real estate or law office business licenses.
But I'm guessing possibly these accountants don't, you know, they're just doing, they're retired and they're still doing some
Well, the thing is, but they're not specifically outlined in here as real estate agents right. and attorneys are. And so like with me, I actually have to have my business license with the Secretary of State. Is my office, is my house, because I can't put it into Coldwell Bankers, but my city business license is at Coldwell Bankers. So, I mean, it just gets to be a little bit crazy. And what they usually want to do is they want to have a place for the notice.
Well, my thinking is along the halls, an office is an office is an office, and whether you're doing accounting or legal research or, you know, you represent buyers of real estate, I think we have all these other rules in place.
So number 10 is the one that's you would have to modify then, because you would have to have advertising.
No,
if you're going to let lawyers.
I think you keep that intact. I think.
Well, that then does real estate.
So it's number 2 that says home occupation shall not conduct business in person with clients at the home.
I would keep all that intact. I think that's right.
See, and this is the one where I look at it. Here's another thing, though, too, is you're telling me I can't have my real estate license, my real estate office at my house. I do a lot there. I have an office in my house that I write off on IRS, but IRS is asking where the location of my office is downtown. So, I don't know.
You get a business license, so you just said you do have an office somewhere else.
Yeah, but the thing is that I don't get to write it off like I do it when I get to write off part of my home like somebody else. It's a tax account. Mm-hmm. So, I'm a sole proprietor.
But the question is not whether or not. But the question is whether or not you think customers should be going to residents. People should be able to open an office at their residence and have customers come.
Well, it's interesting to me that gun dealers are allowed to.
Something came up with that. Yeah, I don't know if there's something. That's an add-on. Obviously, that's a specific interest.
Right, it's a federal law.
That's
some
specific
still.
Interest thing. I, you know, got in there.
But I mean, shit, Amazon will today.
So, how can you sell merchandise if
we'll
nobody comes to
your house?
We'll also
research the licensing boards online. To see if there's something in the license.
Well, I would agree that, you know, if a real estate or law office can meet whatever conditions they're come up with, there's no reason to exclude them outright, because if they're having an office in compliance with all the rest of the conditions, there's no other reason.
But 10 excludes them because they must have advertised sign or
That's their business if they have a sign or not.
Okay, so we leave it like this.
If they need to by their licensing, I mean, there's lots of things. There's lots of occupations that won't meet the rest of the stuff that can't go there. So it's not guaranteeing every type of.
Yeah, because the other piece is like, we're just kind of sitting here, is right now a lot of people like to be in this area because they're close to the Amazon fulfillment. They get Amazon, they're actually considered a top vendor. So they've got their garage full of all sorts of crap, but they're running the UPS trucks all the time and through the neighborhood to send out for the fulfillment. I mean, that has a lot more traffic than I would ever have.
One truck a day?
Huh? One truck a day? No, they can call them because they have the one day.
That would violate number 6.
Yeah. More than once each week.
Delivery boards. Buy more than once each week.
Does that mean I can't have Amazon Prime come to my house once a week?
Right.
I'm screwed.
I'm going to show my wife this submission.
That sounds pretty important.
One of the
times. Yeah. Yeah. Or I order my dinner on Grubhub every day.
Once a day.
That's okay. It does get wrong. Don't worry about it.
Well, is there an interest in
the you think of changing the delivery, the no more than once
a day? Is there an interest in taking up provisions to the home occupation section?
I would like it to not be specific to real estate and law offices. I would just say professional office. It means professional office.
Where is it specific? Does it say not real estate first?
We could specifically exclude those. I imagine it's for that reason, but I don't think it matters if there are regulations allowing them to meet the rest of the conditions.
Right, okay. Then why would you restrict anybody if they meet all the conditions?
Yeah.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah. The other thing,
restaurants, cabinet shops.
We have this list of things. It's not, basically, there's a list up there that probably should all be deleted because it's not all inclusive. They are some uses that require people to go to the place, like barbershop. You can't have a barbershop there.
I think they do that because of the vehicle repair. You know, you don't want somebody working a vehicle repair in the driveway. But they wouldn't meet the requirements.
But to be thrown in the same category as adult entertainment. I mean, really.
You're wanting to sell a house, won't you?
But shoot.
Anyway, I'm just saying none of these up here could meet the requirements anyway. So why are we separating anybody out of it?
Right.
Because I think they figure that not going to be a barbershop. What says right here, I can't do that.
You eliminate the piss and contract.
Even kennel is not compliant with what the animal control.
I don't know. I don't want my neighbors having a food business next door, though.
But there's a lot of things.
So that's one that they can deliver there.
Food processing or packaging. I think that's covered.
They don't want to help show next door.
So restaurant wouldn't be allowed because people can't come to the house.
Right.
Food packaging.
I'm making tortillas or tamales and want to sell them out of my house.
It's not a commercial kitchen. Yeah,
that's a health division. That's
right. We'll get you.
Planning.
Is this sentence
not? Is it saying that
health?
We should talk about it.
Yeah.
We get so many people who
want to. But if we can, at least get rid of real estate law.
They want to grow their vegetables.
We have some guy who wants to grow a bunch of vegetables in a garage and sell them to area restaurants.
Agricultural area or commercial?
Okay. Next.
So I'm looking at the use table from last month, and you've got home occupations, and it's allowed in, I think, all of the residential districts, and then it's allowed in the residential office district, the general office district, the neighborhood business district, but not allowed in the downtown mixed use district, which is probably where, I mean, you've got a lot of.
Well, and offices are allowed use, so then it's not home occupation anymore. Would it be if somebody?
Does Allison Jaunty live in the office?
Home occupation implies you're in a residential occupancy, which could be.
Yeah, it could be downtown.
I don't know, because residents are done.
Then you can't have customers coming.
They don't necessarily have to come. I mean, it's just like I have my real estate office downtown to meet customers, but I still would like to be able to write off and feel free with the IRS that I'm not precluded by local law not to have an office that I can deduct every year. I mean, that's, and this is specifically where it says real estate and law offices. So if I do that, I get audited, and somebody says, oh, by the way, I saw that you're not supposed to have a real estate office in here anyway. You've been deducting for the last 10 years. You know, it's an issue.
So it's personal.
It's a personal thing. Yes, it is personal.
I think it's confusing, too, with it. When you've got a district where you want to have a mix of uses, like the downtown mixed use district, and then you specifically say,
you're precluded.
Right.
But if from any you're in an apartment building downtown...
Yeah, but they're your apartment.
But it should be permitted. Yeah, I get what you're saying. It should be permitted. I think it's not in there because it's presumed to be permitted that you can have the office by anyway, but I think you're right that it should continue in there. You are right that it should continue as permitted through all the district where you could have residential use.
So fire, I guess.
Is it too much of a Pandora's box to consider a signage?
Meaning what?
To allow a 2-square-foot sign
so,
on a home
yeah,
business?
I think that's going to be taken care of when we rewrite the sign code eventually, because we're going to have to adopt a sign code that allows a certain size sign for people to have in their front yard for whatever they want to say. Whether it's Screw Carson City or real estate office, it's up to them. Whether it's free speech or
a sign is a sign.
So I don't think we, which I think eventually when we get to that, is going to address that issue. It's like we need to have a content neutral sign ordinance that is allowed to.
You're gonna run
afoul
of political.
It'll limit the size of political signs.
Can't put the 2x8 sheets of plywood trailer in your front yard.
Yeah. That's a lot of sign code.
Okay, we've already looked at that briefly.
Can't wait to get into that.
So farm equipment.
Okay. So
accessory farm structures.
I wrote quite a bit about accessory farm structures there, about what it says, and kind of in summary, we would like to do away with this distinction between accessory farm structures and accessory structures.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Agree.
Then moving on.
Well, that was very easy.
I bet you the next one isn't.
And the purpose for the reason being that you get, if you call it accessory farm structure, you get out of size requirements. But people are calling a lot of things farm structures that they aren't necessarily into.
Farm. Shed.
Accessory structures and accessory structures. Now, getting to the accessory structures. I think generally the setbacks and the locations of things is where we haven't had too many problems or complaints about setbacks for the different size. In other words, if you have one under 120 square feet, I think is where it starts. You can be closer to the property line. If it's under 400, it's a little bit farther, and bigger than that, it has to be full setbacks. I think those regulations have been okay. Do you have a comment on the setback regulations? See, not yet. Okay, but yeah, we're wrong. But I think we've obviously had and continue to have special use permits and administrative permits for those structures that are over 50%. For administrative permit and in aggregate over 75% that have to come to the planning commission that are special use.
Isn't already going back a little the accessory farm structure? It's already number 9. It's mentioned under accessory structures. Mm-hmm. So it already is there.
They're saying accessory farm structures exceed 5% of personal size. So we should strike that.
Straight.
So that was just
default too. Yeah, I don't have any. I think based on our discussion here, we're going to
that would just get
modify a lot of these two paragraphs.
Super. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to take it back.
Yeah, and so with that was to the 5%.
Yeah, that's number 9.
So we also, Jared, I think in the recommendation there. you know, I mentioned that the 5% is unnecessary if we get all these other regulations about percentage of the size of the primary structure, right? Or perhaps, So, you're looking on page 4 of the staff report, just to kind of jump to it, I have a table on page. On page 3, I have a table kind of showing how what the regulations say now. And I've underlined kind of as a proposed for discussion purposes, if we were to bump up the size, you know, that required an administrative permit or a special use permit. Right now it's 50% and 75%, so maybe we're up to 75% and 100% as a way of discussion. Also, I'm suggesting that maybe we set a lower limit up to which you could do by right anyway. In other words, there are even on some 1-acre parcels, there's some old homes that are maybe 1,200 square feet, 1,600 with a garage, relatively small, just because
it's a smaller house, well,
which 1,000 right. square foot would exceed it, but in 1,000 square feet accessory structure is not particularly big on a 1-acre lot, so you set a minimum that they could do by right.
I'm thinking more of like in the more downtown area and adjacent areas where we have smaller lots that maybe rather than looking at percentage of the size of the primary structure, we look at coverage of the parcel rather than the size of the structure that's there.
Allow accessory structures but have a total coverage limit?
Yeah.
Total coverage.
You're including the house also.
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't even throw out a number because I think we'd have to like run some examples and bring that back.
Right, but I'm throwing that out as a suggestion.
Right.
Because we want to increase the density of the downtown area. And you're not going to increase the density unless you allow for additional coverage of parcels.
So,
but they could go up to 100% of primary structure with administrative permit.
Yeah, but that, if you've got a, you know, there are some houses that are pretty tiny.
Like 800 square feet.
So counter to what you're trying to accomplish, though, it might actually do the opposite and limit the size of the structure. Because right now, we're only talking about accessory structures, but if you limit the coverage right now, you can put a building up to the setback lines on all four sides, but if you limit the coverage of the lot, that you might not be able to even put up that primary building anymore.
Well, and isn't your
if you limit the lot coverage, you might be requiring a smaller building than you would otherwise.
I mean, if you're going to have setbacks, you're going to have.
Well, the setbacks are what's going to get you, and the smaller lots and smaller buildings.
Yeah, well, I guess that I would also suggest that you look at setbacks in those districts, too. I mean, the setbacks...
What you're saying, Paul, is in these smaller zoning districts, forget about the... Who cares what percentage size, as long as it meets the setback and height requirements.
Yeah. And maybe look at the setbacks too, because you know, do you really need to have a 20-foot front setback in the downtown?
Well, they're 20 feet in. It's 20 feet in resident single family 6,000.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. Okay, so you're the commission. When have you ever denied an accessory building, and on what grounds? And on what grounds would you hypothesize that you would deny it?
I think we had one downtown on Curry at one point that they wanted to put something bigger in a few years ago that was, I mean, going to basically cover the lot.
I think it was because
of setbacks that we...
Well, I would say 100% of the lot in some districts.
Right. Because I'm thinking maybe this isn't the right measure, and there's a different measure that you want to use based on your experience.
Yeah, let's and just to back up further, what's the? I think the purpose of limiting accessory structure size has not really been the urban development problem. It's on the larger lots where kind of the secondary structure became this big, huge thing next to the other person's residence.
And then we've run into the thing where we've had him come in, and the accessory structure was fine, but he also had three other sheds in that. We made him trade in a couple sheds and stuff.
Yeah.
Just because the key from having they have like six different accessory things on your property.
And, you know, and as I said, it's not perfect because you can always attach it to your existing residence and fill up the whole lot.
Well, the philosophy I think should be if this is not a revenue stream.
We have to care about that.
I know, but I mean, because every other thing anybody does is a special use permit. If it's really not a revenue stream, whatever we can do, and I think, Lee, this is a wonderful start anyway.
I think this is great.
To make this whole process simpler and more straightforward to everyone, I think the better off we are.
Because this is usually the number one. You go through the year as to what we approve and see, this is probably the number one thing that we see the most of.
I agree.
Well, and if we ever did a consent agenda, we ought to put all these on a consent agenda anyway. That's another issue.
I think this is great, and then add in.
But I think that we need to look at some of the existing smaller lots and downtown where we want to have greater density, because this would limit the ability to have greater density.
And like Lee said,
you're talking about this one line across thing. Maybe we look at that and find a different measure.
Less than 1 acre.
Yeah, less than 1 acre.
For all part, less than 1 acre.
Okay, you all seem to know what you're talking about. What does that mean when you say less than 1 acre?
Lot size.
Parcel size.
Okay.
Parcel size. According in Lee's new modified.
They could have 500 square feet or 75% of structure.
I might even do it with half acre sizes or something like that.
This
would
not be 1 acre.
Well, maybe 6,000.
Yeah, 6,000.
Yeah, because that's a number we use.
Yeah.
There's 12,000.
Yeah.
There's not very many half acres. The 21,000 is not very many.
So do 12,000 and down. 6,000, 12,000. And as you said.
And then what would we?
I would rather do it looking at the starting off with the downtown mixed use district and the adjacent areas to that, rather than saying to the particular zoning district.
I think that's another clarification that downtown and other commercial districts and residential office where it's not even addressed as an allowed use. Well, in the commercial in particular, we're not. This doesn't even apply.
Right.
This is residential districts. So downtown mixed use
would be
different.
It doesn't apply there. But
yeah, there's no limitation.
Okay, but then the downtown, that's pretty, it stops at Division, I think, right? The downtown mixed use district.
Nevada Street.
Nevada's
residential, so Curry's downtown mixed use generally Nevada Street's residential office.
But then maybe look at is the next district, there's residential office, and then there's SF 6000.
Right, yeah. But what are you suggesting in those smaller ones that we start?
That we look at, allowing greater coverage of the lot.
Well, you said it could be covered because of the setbacks.
So one way to allow a large. So CMI suggests that even if it's 75% that requires an administrative 100% on less than 1 acre. Or what would require? I think what we're looking at. What can you do with a building permit? That first line. We're trying to get to what's that threshold where you just get a building permit? Maybe up the permitted square footage to 1,000 square feet.
If I have a 6,000 square foot lot in a little house, a 500 square foot addition, separate building is pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you
We're 75% if you've got 1,000 square feet.
That's 750.
You put in 750 square foot.
But if you get, if
you got 800 square feet.
What difference does it make, I guess is what I'm saying. If you want to increase density, why are you limiting the ability to...
Density of what?
It's the type, you can the type of density, though. Yeah, do you really want just
a bigger garage or
garage structures in the downtown area?
So, to an earlier question...
But you can use a garage or something else in the downtown
is it,
area.
Well, we don't have design standards for single-family residential.
But
yeah,
just putting that out there.
But if they can't, we've had come to us there, they wanted to put living above a garage, that takes a, you know, you can't live in a garage unless it comes through special use permit, right?
Well, if it's a guest building.
So these would be guest buildings?
If it's living space, then the guest, then the living space has to meet the guest building requirements and limitations.
If it could be rented.
But they also, they have to meet the guest building size limitations, but they still also have to meet the accessory structure.
And that could be affected if they're living structures, because you were talking about right now they can't be rented, but that may be addressed later as we go through some of this stuff.
Yeah, did we ever
that would change.
Deal with the accessory dwelling unit
no.
stuff? You never got beyond just talking about it.
See, what you're saying is I have an 800 square foot house and I have a 500 square foot garage with an apartment on top of it, and I rent it out. Why can't I do that?
Well, I'm saying, why can't I, if I've got a 6,000 square foot lot in the, you know, adjacent to the downtown district, and I, it's in the, say it's in the residential office, can I cover that lot with a house?
Yes.
We don't
but have to. Well, the setbacks, to whatever the front yeah, side, front. 5 yards,
but, it's not 3,500 square feet.
But if it were SF 6000 adjacent to the residential office, then I'd be limited to...
Well, you can cover it with the primary structure up to the setbacks. Single family. That's what I'm saying. In all districts, you could build a giant... You could attach garages until you cover the whole lot up to the setback.
But line. As long as if it's detached, you can't do it.
Yes.
So let's... But let's just say you can...
Which goes back to, is there... And we don't get a lot of...
Yeah, the building code talks about detached structure. It talks about distances and stuff like that. So why don't we just let people build to the building code?
To the setbacks and height requirements in on smaller lots.
Yeah.
That's an option.
But again, it would be affected as to what you want is whether you can rent it or not.
Well, I'm just talking about structures in general. Yeah. Right. Next thing.
When you're in a SF6 or an SF12 zone, and everybody's got a relatively small house with an attached garage and a reasonable front and backyard, if you're going to allow all these detached accessory structures beyond maybe one gardening shed or something like that, those whole neighborhoods are going to completely change.
Change is inevitable.
So they would still have that. So the setbacks.
Exactly.
Okay. Single family 6,000 zoning, typically the places they're building lots now where they have 6,000 square feet, the garage is up to the front setback, at least a portion of the rear of the house is up to the rear setback. It's like that in Silver Oak.
Oh yeah, they're just packed.
It's like that in regular lots.
Beautiful homes.
So the yard, we're not talking about structures taking up that additional yard area. They would still have to meet those setbacks, which in most districts, well, it might be 10 feet.
It's 10 feet in the rear.
Yeah, it's 10 feet in the rear of single family six.
That's a big RV.
I could put another structure on my lot.
Your house takes up the
6,000 square foot lot. My house is 1,758 square feet. But there is absolutely nowhere on either side or back that I could put another structure of any
So we're only talking, that's, I think that's your point, we're only talking about putting structures within those setback lines.
Yes.
Except for small sheds, there would be an exception.
Yeah.
No, just for storage, not your...
Except for your shisha. Is it covered?
I guess what I'm really talking about is, let's think about how we want the downtown to develop, and, you know, in addition to the way it already is, but do we want to allow for higher density rather than, you know, requiring builders to build out where they have, where we have to extend our sewer lines and water lines and roads and all of that. We've already got the infrastructure there. Why not use what we already have to a greater extent?
Yeah, but in this accessory structure discussion, I don't think that's the area that
well,
we're talking
accessory
about.
Dwelling units too. I would include in that.
Yeah. I think what I was trying to do is there are places that have like the 6,000 square foot lots and so forth, not necessarily in downtown, that have CCNRs to preclude them from being able to put that on their properties. But because
to put what?
Additional accessory buildings, because it actually has to go with their architecture committees.
Is accessory dwellings another section?
If I didn't mention that in our last one, that's another thing we have to, that goes into the definitions and uses, is, remember the discussion a long time ago, right now they're called guest buildings, can't pay, but part of the whole thing that really threads it throughout into more titles than we were trying to fix at the time is making the distinction between accessory dwellings and other
accessory structures,
living things, and having a separate definition for accessory dwellings versus guest buildings or other accessory structures, and really changing the definitions. But so that's going to be part of this whole thing. That's why we stopped the accessory. I don't want to say we stopped it, but that's where the accessory dwelling discussion ended. Is that we need to amend the definitions. We need to change it throughout Title 1804, and so it reached out into more than just a little code there.
And this is where we see most of it. People want a bigger garage, they want a two-story for RV storage and a shop, whatever, but it's not dwellings. This covers that other area that we're talking about here.
It's a structure. Keep saying about the use.
Hey, Lee, can you clarify something for me? On the current code right here, it's mentioning 120 square feet up to 400 square feet. How did that relate back to your table over in your document? Or
so that paragraph, and it's paragraph 3 under 05055, that relates to setback requirements. If you have structures less than 120 square feet, up to 100 square feet,
that's only setback. Okay.
Yeah, that those are requirements related to setbacks. Each one of those structures that you build of varying sizes counts toward the accessory structure area that goes against your total percentage that you're allowed on the site. So if you have a 200 square foot and a 200 square foot, you have 400 square feet of accessory structure that counts towards your permitted percentage.
But if you can build a house up to the setback lines in any district, it doesn't.
I might suggest for clarity that we do more tables like this then to maybe make it easier to digest. Because I read this a couple of times.
Yeah.
The KISS
program. Yeah, we have. Yeah. And speaking of user friendly, this is one where we really have to sit down.
We have to read it like 5 times.
We have to sit down with the customer.
Yeah, a nice table matrix is way better when you're dealing with this stuff.
Okay.
Are you guys good with Lee's proposal?
I think this is a great, you know, this should help take some stuff away.
This is a starting point.
I think that it's worth discussion when we get to the point of having public comments, of highlighting this and some discussion, and possibly some other alternatives.
I like it. Should you clarify that number of accessory structures is not, I mean, to your point, you said, what if someone just keeps building a bunch of these things, yeah, and then all you're looking at is the primary structure? Should we have something that says?
Well, it says that it includes the size of the attached accessory structures combined.
Yeah.
Right below it. Number one.
Yeah.
So that means if you got three sheds, you've got 600 square feet already, you're going to probably get a permit.
Yeah.
Have to.
They may have to move some.
Okay.
We've had it occur where people said, okay, I'll take these two down because I want to do this. And that made the neighbors happy who didn't want to look at five structures over there. They looked at one bigger one instead of.
The footnote number one, I think, answered.
Yes.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah. And it says, we don't differentiate the parcel size of how you read it all.
Just that 5% does.
And is it by parcel size?
Yeah, the 5% says if it's more than 21, if the lot's more than 21,000 square feet, then if it covers more than 5% of the lot, then we have to go get special use permit.
It should probably be by zoning rather than parcel size.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking because in the 1 acre, there's 1 acre parcels, sometimes there's 0.9 acre parcels, but they should be subject to the same. But, so I think this is an area, I think you've got some direction to come back.
Do you see any need, Lee, if you get up to 5 or 10 acre to maybe even going larger than that? Or maybe allowing them multiples?
Does it even apply to?
Because we have 1 acre or larger is 1,000 or 75, it's a permit. But what if they've got a 5 acre and only have a 1,500 square foot house on it? I mean, could they have more than one before they have to come to us? Maybe you'd limit the size, or I don't know.
I almost think it's good to come to you only because then we start getting into what's the use of the land.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. I didn't know how many, there's a couple partial sizes larger than the 1 acre. I know 2 acre, 5 acre. All right.
Okay, so like I said, I'm trying to get you out of here in 2 hours, and we're coming up on 4:45. So, but we're almost done with this section. This is good. But we've been done with this chapter. So,
yeah,
we are
almost done.
Can you just put a reminder? I'm not going to start at 5 because I have the library for it.
What time did it start?
5.
Okay.
So I got to keep
that up.
It's early.
3 minutes
before.
Let's go fast.
Okay.
This
belongs in the definitions.
Yeah. And they know I gave them a head start.
Okay. I'm looking at.
Okay, we can skip the accessory unit.
I'm losing my place here. Accessory use, yeah, point of return. This belongs, actually, we need to find out what it refers to.
Yeah, that's a question. I've never read
that. No, it's one of these things.
Okay. Use is required to be within a structure. Like I said, this is the section that says you can't put a table out on a vacant lot.
You can't sell lemonade on your driveway.
Some were adopted in Gordon, it's not requiring a business license for lemonade stands, just so they were really clear on that. I just read that. Okay, well, manufactured homes within installation within a single-family zoning district. So this is actually required by state law that we allow manufactured homes anywhere a single-family home is allowed. It allows us to impose certain design requirements which are reflected in these standards. So I don't know that there's much we can amend to this.
Because it's state law?
I don't think
federal
we went...
Federal.
No, it's state. It's adopted in NRS, so it might be based, it's likely based on federal law, yeah. I don't think there's much of this that we could change if we wanted to.
There was a question about whether or not immediate vicinity should mean the 300 feet or if that...
No, I think she...
I think
she was confused about
okay.
noticing and expanding noticing okay. down on your basis. Like, no, it doesn't.
Okay. This section, I think, is working. We do occasionally get manufactured homes in single-family zoning districts, and we're really not getting a lot of that.
Okay. And that's that. Okay, private wind energy and conversion systems. This is the last section, although it's 4 pages long.
You know, it was funny, when we first started with the wind, we had how many, several, 4 or 5 came in, and we haven't seen one in like 4 years.
Yeah, more than 2 came in, 2 were actually constructed. 1 of the 2 was taken down because he wasn't getting the results he wanted. And the other, there's one still going up on Valley View or
right.
somewhere up in that vicinity. We haven't heard much about it, but years ago, the guy personally told me, said, I wish I didn't put it up. So
is that the one on Washington?
Washington came down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another one that was approved. But the code requires us to have them, so even though...
So if we aren't getting any requests for them, why worry too much about the code?
Yeah. And the code, that still requires us to allow them, so I think we would...
I think the setbacks and all that, you know, when we're addressed, we're good.
Well, but again, we're still in general provisions. If we've got something we don't use very much, why don't we just put it in the building standard?
It probably belongs
or solar panels.
Communication facilities, wireless communication facilities and things.
And solar and whatever, maybe have them all kind of in the same
zone together.
In its own section somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, I change it, just put it somewhere where it belongs.
I don't think we need to do anything with it. I think we're going forward. It's pretty well covered. It gives us plenty of control over
on 2B, it seems like we had a lot of lawyer words on that one to say one thing. We want to shrink that.
Which one?
Utility only window.
What wind machines, the individual component?
On 2B. Yeah.
Oh, 2B.
The number per parcel.
This tariff shall include the powers as
well. Actually, one wind machine.
You're allowed one.
You're allowed one.
I could have just said that. You get one. You get one. save some tuner.
How many you get? One. How many ways can you see it? Plenty. You get one.
Okay. Anything else in this chapter?
We did it.
Okay. Thank you for your comments again. So moving on to item D2 on the agenda is discussion regarding topics at future workshops. So just real quick on future topics. I have a list here. I have some meeting dates. So on future topics, I have a list here, like historic district. It's really not your bailiwick, and with downtown mixed use stand, which is procedural standards, hillside development procedural standards. Recreation vehicle procedural standards. I'm not sure how much we want to focus on any of these chapters unless you say otherwise. I think I would personally like to start getting into the development standards.
Yes. Since you're finishing this, that makes sense.
That that's not one meeting. That's going to be multiple workshops in itself, getting through development standards. So I think if, you know, unless you oppose that, we'll do that. Furthermore, I want to say again that on October 18th, I'm going to the Board of Supervisors to put an item on the agenda just to update them on what we're doing and possibly to get some discussion from them on what areas of focus they think the Planning Commission we should be looking at.
And you can let them know where we're planning to go next or whatever.
So, yeah, I'm going to give them an outline of what we're doing here. That we're getting some background, getting some preliminary stuff before coming back and having, starting to propose changes and having public workshops and input. But you're welcome to come to that. But I'll send out the agenda to everybody at that board meeting if you're interested in attending that. Okay, and then the one thing, I'm just moving along and you can tell me other things after that, but meeting dates. I was looking at options of meeting dates when we're all available. Well, I don't have too many options, except for in October, we could do it the day before or the day after the Planning Commission meeting. And then on the November and December, it's those dates adjacent to the special Planning Commission meetings due to holidays. So are those, first we need to pick an October date if we're going to have one, and then let me know if those November dates are okay, or we just continue to another date. Come on in.
Which one works better for everyone in October, the day before or day after?
I'm not going to be available to either.
Either which one? October?
Yeah.
29th and 31st.
And the Planning Commission meeting is the 30th.
And you can't go like a week earlier or something on that? Or wouldn't give you that time?
25th.
The
last Friday of the month.
Well, one of the problems is that tomorrow, you know, the Coroner's office have other meetings through the weeks earlier. It's usually towards the end of the month.
It would be good to have Paul there if it's good. Would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you're going to talk about developers.
Yeah, please. That's our first definition, we need you there.
Well, and I would say not earlier, because you're not going to get anything from me earlier.
Okay, so maybe first part of November.
At this point. Yeah, okay.
I would like to, my recommendation would be that we should hopefully all be able to be there.
Yeah.
Especially our planner.
Well, what does the November 20th, the 19th is the Planning Commission meeting, and what does November 20th look like for everybody?
Looks okay to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the November and December dates are fine. It's just this October date we're trying to head around.
Pending hearing from the Board of Supervisors in October, maybe.
Skip
maybe
October.
The next one is just
do November.
November.
Okay.
Well, I'm going
to be what? The Thursday would be.
The Commission is going to be November 20th. 21st looks open.
20th. Okay. November.
Well, 20th is, I know.
It's the 20th, so she said the 21st.
So far it looks open, but I need to check with library to see what they're doing about Thanksgiving.
Wait,
are you in November?
You've got November 20th is our meeting. You said the 19th is our meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, the 19th.
Yeah. Planning Commission and admin.
It's Wednesday the 19th, then the Thursday should be the 20th, right?
21st.
Oh, the meeting, that's wrong. The meeting's on the meeting's got to be on the 20th.
Yeah, the meeting's on the 20th.
Wednesday the 20th.
Oh, unless you change it.
Do we
go to a Tuesday?
We
go
to a Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, that's right. It's the holiday one. It looks like the 20th is open.
Okay, well, let's tentatively plan it for the
20th. What time? Is that the 3rd? Yeah, you did it because Airport Authority meets at 6. So if you do it early, Airport Authority meets at 6.
We would do it at this.
We'd do it 3 to 5 again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only meeting I have.
The meeting on the 19th, is that at the regular time? The regular?
Yes. Yes.
At 5.
Yeah.
All right.
What dates are set for the for the discussion.
Yeah, now I'm confused. Just tell me when to be here.
It'd be the 20th at 3.
Board of Supervisors is October 18th. And now November 20th.
We're probably going to skip this.
In the afternoon.
Probably be here 3 to 5.
And December 18th. Well, and we can discuss. We can tentatively December 18th. We can finalize that.
So the November return.
Our meetings for the 19th.
Yeah. Leah, are you going to update the agenda to show that these discussions also include discussions of 17:10?
Well, update the agenda. We have months of. I think we'll get to that eventually.
Eventually, okay.
Yeah. And I think that's the direction we'd like to hear from the board too, what their priorities are.
Okay. So, public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on or discuss any topic relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matters that are not included on the agenda as an action item. Thank the public for being here.
Actually, real quick, if anyone hasn't told us they want to go to the planning conference in Sparks and they want to,
when is it?
It's 14th, 15th, and 16th.
They're great
October.
Meetings.
It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 14th, 15th, 16th of October. We're happy to sign you up and pay for you, even if you can only go to part of it. If you want me to send you the information about it, I can do that. The rates go up September or October 1st, so we're trying to get registered at that time.
But this is a problem in the past. This is someone we did at the lake last year. Right?
2 years. It would have been
2 years.
It was in Carson City 2 years ago.
Yeah, Carson City was 2 years ago.
So if you haven't signed up, I'll send you the information. I'll go upstairs and send it to you so you can look at the sessions and see if there's anything. You don't have to go for all 3 days. You can just do it half a day. It's not that expensive.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a motion for adjournment and a second. All in favor, aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to call this meeting on September 26, 2019 to order. We'll start with the roll call.
Chair Long.
Here.
Vice Chair Cranston.
Here.
Trustee Balderson.
Present.
Trustee Patton.
Here.
Quorum's present.
All right, we'll start with public comment. If any members of the public wish to address the Library Board of Trustees, they may come forward now. Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 3, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Has everybody had a chance to look through them? Any changes? I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Did you want to? I move to approve the minutes.
I'll second it. Aye.
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 All against?
All against? All right, the motion carries and the minutes are approved. So we'll move on to item number 4, possible action for the Library Board of Trustees business.
And this should have been removed since there was no action. So you can have nothing to deal with here.
So we will skip and move on to item number 5, Library Director Reports.
All right. Well, Diane Baker, Interim Library Director, for the record, and this should be the final report that I bring to you as the Interim Library Director, because number one on the list is October 2nd. Our new Library Director, Todd Colgrove, will be starting at the library, and we're looking forward to that. Wrapping into that, I don't have that elsewhere, but I had, I do have it just popping down to informational. With the Friends of the Carson City Library is looking to do a welcome event, potentially the second weekend in October, but things are still being set on that. So they are looking forward to be able to have an open meet and greet event for the community. Then the last position, we're going for that full staffing for our full-timers, library assistant for access services. I had October 14th here. It's been bumped to October 21st just because of some logistics thing, but coming together here in October. Just informational, I was out for a while in a week in September. Amy Lauder, who is now out for a few days herself, was acting director. Everything went fabulous with our crew, so that was non-issue. Trustee emeritus status, I had contacted the Elko County Library regarding their situation. They have this position in place in Elko County. They are going through their archives to get me more information because they did this like about 15 years ago. So she didn't have that information immediately available, wanted to see what they had, how they set it up, so I could share that with Todd, our DDA, so we could have that set up. So that's the status where we're at this point. I hope to have more information for you for the October meeting on that situation. Then library improvements, we did get capital improvement funds, not a huge amount, but $10,000, and that's to replace the handicap fixtures in the public restrooms. So moving a little bit on that, those really do need replacing. And then for the Nevada Library Association meeting is in Reno, November 3rd and 4th, and those are some of the days that were voted for closure, so all the full-time staff can attend. And we were able to also arrange for, and the Nevada Library Association put in an institutional pricing registration for those that send a certain number of individuals or more. And so we will have a savings from the regular registration. Early bird was $120 and ours will be $90 per person. So that's going to be much better in the budget. Then just you can see the activities listed there, and the generally I wanted to say the chamber events with the new publisher for the Nevada Appeal, great event on that part, was able to talk to the publisher, and he's still eager to keep, you know, and to relook and keep a good community presence and community paper going on. So we do rely on that as our traditional media outlet. So that was very encouraging with what they're looking forward to. Grants update, some good things going on. Reports, of course, are for the last year's grants are due, but we did receive officially the Google Micro grant and already underway rolling things out on that. That's the continuation of the Grow with Google event that we had in June, and that made us eligible for one of these grants. And we'll be hearing more about that as well. Then the LSDA Community Enhancement Grant, that's a $10,000 grant from the State Library and Archives. that is ready to get underway and to really help things take off with the makerspace. We had an individual scholarship awarded for a leadership class, and then a couple of other things that are we usually have announcements from the State Library at this point, the State Collection Development Grants, and the LSTA Competitive Grants. They're currently on hold. We're waiting for their schedule. I think they've changed the calendar some. I've gotten some third-hand information that it's they're coming out soon. But it was a little concerning that they've been, that this is a fair amount later than normal in the year. So that should still be on track. Then I wanted to give you just the wrap-up for the Adams Hub for Innovation, where there were a few events. The most notable one there is one of the companies, DLL Technologies. They had a chamber ribbon cutting, really great event that they had at the hub and well attended. I've been working with the NNDA outreach staff, Sean, and we're still moving forward with the toolbox, with the library having their information in that toolbox. And they do have a board. They have established an advisory board for the Adams Hub. And Margaret Smith is the first member of that board. She was also one of the individuals that was considered for trustee here. So they spirited her over there to that particular board. And she's very eager to continue with the library and maintain a good connection there. So we're really pleased with that. The other items were in the final wrap-up parts with the day-to-day operations. They have taken over, and we're just doing the final reconciliations of expenses and other aspects so we can wrap that part up. But the bright spot in all of that is we still do have a good working relationship with the Hoppin May Adams Foundation and with Steve Neighbors. So that is the positive part in all of the situation. So are there any questions? Okay. Then.
Okay, we'll move on to item 5B, presentation and discussion of the budget reports.
Thank you again, Diane Baker, for the record. And I am still bringing you information from FY19. This is probably going to be the final. There's still some dribs and drabs. They're wrapping up because of the changeover from the old system to the new system and having all that. But this is what you've received in your packet, and this information is so close to the final. I think this should be pretty close to a wrap on that. So you can see where we were with expenses in the general fund. You see that we did have salary savings, which we were expecting on that part. So some of the salary savings we didn't transfer back, I think, as much as maybe the city was expecting, because we did use additional funds in our part-time and temporary staffing because of the shortages that we had during the year. But we still came out just fine with that. And pretty much most of the other categories, we were either right to the limit or very close to full expenditure of the line items. And then with the grants, that is the last item there. Again, if not full expenditure, very close on that. And there's still, on the planning grant, there's a couple of expenses that still need to clear on that. That's one of the last items. So the expenditures don't show all the final issues. Okay, and then just a quick overview. You can see where we were with the gift fund and then the closeout information for the Adams Hub. You do have that in backup form. I did create, I'll pop onto the backup. If you had any questions, there is one page out of order in the PDF there. It's actually page 2 is in the wrong place. I think it was page 2. But there's, I'm sorry, it's further down. But I thought there was one that was out of the order there. what you're seeing, again, is how we are looking at the information from the new system. I think it will be a little easier. As a matter of fact, today I was at a meeting, a little workshop, on additional ways to generate reports. That module hadn't been up until recently or wasn't working properly. We were kind of going around back door to get some of these reports for the meetings here, but it should be a little easier to generate some of these reports. So you have the detail, you have the summary, and then you have the account detail. So I will look at, go to the FY20 backup. I do have, I didn't have it in time for the publishing. There is a new widget, the visual for FY2020 that is going to be all ready to go, similar format as what you were used to for FY19. So you do have the detail for FY20. We're underway. They're finally, we're getting more of the uploads are getting to the timeliness that they were expected now that we are, you know, getting way more familiar with the system. And there are, I think we're pretty much on track where we expect to be. We have some, the only fund we have some work to do with the fiscal department is the gift fund. Some of our information is not 100% in the system at the moment, and we may have to wait for the reconciliation for it all to show appropriately, but that is one we are working on. And I don't know if you had any other questions. I would be glad to answer anything with regard to closeout of fiscal year 19 or are getting underway with fiscal year 20.
New person question, is the state fiscal year, federal fiscal year, when does the year start and stop?
State and the city and state have the July to June fiscal year. The federal is the October one. What we, the way the federal grants that run through the state library, that's the Library Services and Technology Act funds, that really rolls through two federal fiscal years. So the funding that they would be, we're waiting for them to open the announcement for would be fiscal year 20. The funding for that wouldn't be available or wouldn't be actually granted until July of 20. So it really comes, would come to us in fiscal 21, our fiscal 21, but that would be federal fiscal 20.
Pretty straightforward. Okay, thank you.
Sure. And that's what I have.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll move on to item number 6, other administrative reports. We'll start with item 6A and the creative learning update.
Maria Cuesta, creative learning manager for the record. So first things first, we've had freshman PSA visits again this month. So each year we have the freshman students at Carson High School come over to actually check out our digitorium space to see all the resources that are available for them. The main purpose for that is that as a freshman, they receive a public service announcement project, and a lot of the equipment that we offer, they can use that towards completing the project. So this year we had 17 different classes and about 450 students come through and check out our space. Most of these were run by Jay Hodnett, the Creative Learning Senior Library Assistant and Digitorium Facilitator. So she did a fantastic job working with Jen Minifee at Carson High School to coordinate all those class visits. We do have a couple makeup classes in October, but for the most part, we've gotten them all into the library this month. Normally, we do have them come in October, but it worked out nicely for them to come a little bit earlier this time around. Any questions about the PSA visits or anything like that? Great. And then secondly, I have information. So Diane had mentioned earlier about the Google Micro Grant. So that's the library's Lead with Digital Skills. We're excited. In August, we were awarded that opportunity, which is $1,000 that will be reimbursed to us for this program. We've been partnering with Join Inc., which is fantastic. This is our first time actually partnering with them. So they have, Daryl Smith from Join Inc. has been running the job seeking with Google classes. And then Vanna Bells, our creative learning librarian, is offering the job seeking with Nevada Career Explorer classes, which is a nice supplement to what they're learning with Google tools. With the Nevada Career Explorer, I just want to note that's offered mainly because of the Nevada State Library, which is fantastic, and we're actually a pilot library for them as well. So this is great for us doing these programs, so it ties in nicely with both project goals. But these program series started last week, was the first class that we offered, and it extends into October. I believe the last date is October 12th for the classes. Any questions about the grant or...
Okay. Thank you, Maria. Okay, let's move on to item 6B, Access Services.
Irma Reinhart, Access Services Manager for the record. So the first thing I have up here is library volunteers. The little Excel spreadsheet over there just shows how many hours our volunteers have put in over the last 2018-2019 year, over 700 hours total between 10 adult volunteers. This number doesn't include all the teen volunteers that come in. So we are looking to, I guess, sort of spruce up the number of volunteers we have. And we do have quite a number of people interested in volunteering, whether they're under 18 or over 18. So we started having Anna Kurland, Access Services Librarian, and Jana Wiersma of Creative Learning to go over the applications and sort of do a mini interview with the volunteers to, you know, just get a feel for what they are like and see how much dedication and time they can put into volunteering. So I'm glad that we're getting that rolling again. They do a number of things between shelving, encoding, assisting with programs. It's really helpful for the staff and helpful for our patrons. We started with having youth volunteers screened first because they're easier to screen. And then we are looking to start adding over 18 this month. That process is a little bit more difficult. Over 18, they are required a background check, so it's just another layer for our staff and for the potential volunteers to go through. Are there any questions about this at all?
Good.
So I'm just curious if you could expand a little bit more on how volunteers are onboarded, if they receive training, and if there's any limits around number of hours that they volunteer.
Yeah, so there is a limit based on the city, and I'm not quite sure off the top of my head how many hours maximum they can volunteer a week.
It's in the, you know, you can, I believe, up to 20 hours.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But in terms of how volunteers are trained, it kind of depends on where they're going to go. So typically our 18 and under crowds, so those still in school, they're often helping with the youth side of things. So their supervisor is Jana Wiersma, who is a creative learning. So she trains them on everything from, you know, shelving and things like that to how to assist with a program. And then Anna does the same thing for some of the volunteers that come over onto the access side of things. So training on how to shelf read, things of that nature, the policies of what you can and cannot do here at the library.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Are we looking at a target number of volunteers that we want to have?
Not really a target number. Target hours. So we had about 700 last year. So we're looking, hopefully, for adult volunteers anyway, hopefully about 800 hours.
And what's the youngest that they can be to volunteer under 18?
14.
Thanks, Armel.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I have one more thing.
Oh, sorry.
So the last thing I have is database cleanup. So from this list here, you can see we have quite a few categories of library card patrons, anything from general adult to homebound, premier, things like that. Total, we have over 40,000 patrons in our system that are active. So one of the things that Access is looking to do, hopefully before the end of February, is have this whole database cleaned up. And what I mean by that is ensuring that phone numbers, zip codes, just the nitty-gritty details of the accounts are accurate and formatted correctly, having duplicate accounts removed so that when patrons come up, we find the correct patron, and so that patrons receive the notifications that their books or items are ready for pickup or due back soon. Because formatting does play a huge part of this, I do want my staff to be able to clean this database up. Because it is 40,000 records, and because we are doing it manually, going through each single record, it is going to take some time, but I'm hoping to have this done before the end of February. Are there any questions about that?
What data do we collect for the patron accounts? You said zip code and name. Is that it?
So patron record is going to have first and last name, date of birth, address, and then a phone number or an email address.
So it's PII.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, when you delete them, do you do any kind of formatting to really get down to the deep level cleaning, or you just delete them from the database?
So if it's a duplicate record or?
Just if it's an expired account, let's say.
Oh, so if it's an expired account, that'll just be removed. And that's if the card has been expired for 5 years.
It has to be, have it been expired for 5 years before you delete them?
I believe it's 5 years.
It 3 to 5 years. There are two different things. We do a purge it sometimes,
yeah.
That is just not manually record by record, but that where a purge list is put together. But it's been almost 2 years,
yeah,
since we did the that purge. So that one doesn't require a record by record review. That is just pulled by the dates, and that's up to 3 years. And then this is another level, but what the value of the database cleanup is exactly where you're going. That the information that we're able to pull from the database, or when we work with some other systems to try to analyze our patrons and information, that gives us the best detail and the most robust information.
Right.
We did it under our planning grant. We have been working with another company, Gale Analytics, and they, although they took the total of our information not quite a year ago, about 9 months ago, and that was only about a year after the purge. So we had pretty good information regarding current patrons. And I've been able to get some reports that we use for planning. We're since the subscription is wrapping up and it's a little pricey, so it's not one that we can continue on in our regular budget, we're going to do some final reports before the subscription ends, and that will be some information we'll be able to bring to you and show you, you know, the before and after and how things have changed in a 12-month period or pretty close to that. So, but the value of working in that system is based on the data that we were able to provide. So these database cleanups are very important.
No, I agree. I'm more concerned about the security of it because it's so much PII in a single location, especially if we're keeping it for longer than the user needs it to be kept, if their accounts are expiring, things like that. So that's just a level of concern for me. But you guys are purging it, you're cleaning it up, so it's good.
I would second that concern about security, especially.
And that is one of the aspects that does relate also to the Nevada Library Cooperative, and they do have the security initiatives in there, so it's not strictly our level of security as well, where it's the whole group, the network security that is set into the cooperative. But that type of thing does take constant vigilance, and yeah, you can't just say, oh, we got great security, and 2 years later, you don't.
Right. It's a moving target. Well, I did have one more question. We do not, so I heard you say we keep track of patrons' names, addresses, phone numbers, email, not anything they checked out, not titles.
So if they have an item checked out, it shows up on their account. But once they return the item, that's cleared from their record.
Thank you.
All right. And if there's no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No, we're good. Sorry.
No, that's good. All right. Let's move on to item 6C, the collection development update.
Diane Baker, I will bring this for Amy Lauder, who is out for a few days this week on some well-earned vacation. What you have there are pretty straightforward, where we do have the updates on what they're doing with readers' advisory skills, and it's a regular question that we have, especially if an individual has, you know, loves a certain author, has read everything. And where can we go with that? So there are a number of things, not only individual training, but we do have a subscription to what's called Novelist, and that is a specific program that is built into the into Polaris, and it does show up where individuals can identify, go, oh, you know, want to read something else. So there are a number of ways for that information to be available. And as you see also, Rachel March, who is a senior library assistant, is continuing to develop her skills as part of our professional development that we have for every full-time staff member required for that. And then the Boys and Girls Club, a constant refresh. We had that great program last year where we dedicated the state collection development funds to the Boys and Girls Club to really get that collection back up and going, and also expand it into the teen area to give them a more robust collection as well. And this is continuing on, and we're able to keep that program going and keep that fresh, and that's what you're seeing here, where they turn over and bring in new materials for the individuals there. And it's still a very popular collection, especially the youth collection, that is well used, and with one of our great part-time workers, James Wernett, is over there and is just well loved in his role there. So if there's any questions, I'll try to answer them for that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Diane. All right, item number 7, board member announcements and requests for information. Do you want to start first?
I do. So I have a couple things if we can add to the next agenda. So first, we have a new director coming. I know that in his interviews with us, he mentioned he seems to have a pretty specific vision of where strategically Carson City Library fits into the fold statewide. So I'd like him to expand on that and to give kind of a rundown on where his vision is directed, if that makes sense, a little introductory. And I don't know if that's customary or not, but it, you know, seems to me you wouldn't have that much turnover, so we can start a new tradition.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
Got it. So that's my first item. The second, of course, Census 2020 is here before we know it. I know that the American Library Association is partnering with the Census Bureau. This is the first time the U.S. Census will be largely online. And I would like some type of, I don't know, a report or an update somewhere, if possible, Madam Chair, if we could put on the agenda for a standing item, perhaps, until the census is over, just to know what our efforts are there.
What kind of efforts?
Yeah, do you mean, like, our efforts of, like, doing outreach to get people to come in and do the census, or?
Yes, for many patrons, it could be that the only internet access is at the library. So given that the folks who are least likely to be counted are potentially overlapped in that population, I'd like to catch them and like to know what our efforts are around catching them.
I can respond a little bit to that.
Yes, please.
At this point. We have been in contact with Census 2020 staff. They have been making the rounds. Of course, initially it was to get census workers and using library as an operation for that. The Nevada State Library Archives and Public Records is also coordinating statewide efforts with public libraries, especially due to this being largely online situation. And as I understand it, just going out door to door is like absolutely last step in that. But we are looking forward to being a full participant in that. But having that as a regular report out item, no problem.
We'll keep it hopefully at the top of our minds. I know door-to-door is great if you have a door, so people who are homeless, transient, or otherwise don't have a door, they might be at the library, but that might be the only place you can catch them. And then my last question would be, this might be for the new director when he gets here, but the legislative interim has started, and if there are any committees, any advocacy efforts that the board needs to be made aware of that maybe that would be of particular interest that would affect policy around what goes on at libraries in the state, I would like to be kept abreast of that as well.
I love hearing you say that. Okay. That's great. Yeah.
That's Diane's area. She does a really good job at keeping us up to date. And I don't think we had anything in the last session that was that took a lot of the board.
Most of the advocacy was with regard to budgetary items. There were a couple of things to keep watch on that related to weapons in libraries, that was the other main issue that was in place at that this time. So I know they are doing some initial work at the state library, of course, because their budget actually they get underway no time, probably in the next few months.
It's around the corner, yeah.
Right, which you know full well. And the Nevada Library Association also has a regular committee. I was co-chair of the Government Relations Committee last session.
Great.
So, okay.
Great. So
thank you.
That's all right. To add to the agenda. Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to make these meetings longer, but.
I think that needs to be in our.
Especially the director giving us his vision. I think that's important.
I think so, too. Do I need to do anything on that as far as adding to the agendas? We can just do it?
Especially board members can contact either through the chair or through the library if there are items of interest to be added to the agenda. Mm-hmm. And then that would go to, if it comes to us, it would go to the chair. And then be reviewed for addition to the agenda. So it's not, if you don't do it now, you can't do it at all, at that point.
Okay.
So I have two things. Actually, one is just, Diane, can you make sure that we all have the information we need to log in to do the board training? Because we do need to get that taken care of so that we can.
Okay, I should. I
think everybody has it, but.
I can reset
it. And there's an app. There's a Moodle app, so you can do it on your phone. Which
okay,
I
yeah,
was so excited
we
to
went
see.
With Julie, we did have, there were a couple of issues, but we got it.
Okay.
We did. So I can resend.
So we'll ask you when we have questions about the app.
Yeah. And
Julie!
Uh-huh. I'll show you. It's a little orange.
So I will resend the login data. It's very
I know I have it. Yeah.
But just so you don't have to go searching down into your information on that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to remind everybody that we needed to get on that since
it is important.
It's really important. And then the other thing is just to talk about the November-December meeting dates. So we usually combine the November-December meeting. We have fulfilled our required meeting number this year, but we don't want to wait till January, I don't think. But do you have... So Diane and I looked at the calendar, and it's definitely not going to be a Thursday, but
no.
I know that the calendar is really even full even for other days. So
other holidays, I think, are on the, you know, Christmas and New Year's are on Wednesdays this year, so right smack in the middle of the week, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's not.
Yeah, and then a lot of the dates are just taken up by other, this room.
Got it.
The calendar of this room is probably the biggest.
Yeah, let me. Sorry, I didn't have
Does
that
our
one.
Does meeting have to be here?
Do we easier
just do
here
it
because
it's convenient? Because, yeah,
we do it here, and it was at the request of the the city manager to have it here. It does the ease of recording meetings and the like. We have had them at other locations and done recordings and forward the recordings, especially if our recording secretary wasn't able to be here. But if it's here, it's definitely easier, but we are not, 100% tied here. If we have to have a meeting and we don't have an opportunity to use this room.
I wonder if maybe there's an opportunity to have a meeting that's non-traditional time or day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had meetings Fridays. We've done
Saturday meetings. Is that an option?
I've never had one. Tamar, can you comment?
Just a couple of workshops, but...
Okay. I just wonder about public input. I mean, no one's here, so if we could have it at a time where maybe more folks might be more inclined to attend.
We can entertain that. Oh, I hate this. Sorry.
I
logged out and it's like, or let it go to sleep.
The video
Yeah, there's.
It really is a pain if we don't do it. We did a lot of people out of their regular jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of the individuals would either have to have overtime or. Todd's going.
Especially,
we got more than a few in town.
Plenty, yeah. There's plenty, especially in Carson City.
I happen to work with one.
I just wonder, as a matter of public engagement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I understand.
You know.
5 o'clock is a weird time after everyone's getting off work to come in and do a meeting like this.
And I'm not opposed. I'm just curious if we've got kind of a quasi-booked schedule anyway. Maybe it's an opportunity to do some different schedules.
Okay.
Same deal.
So what I have on the screen now for you, this is the calendar that the coordinator that handles the Sierra Room sent to me. It's November and December, and the November, it's like, oh, there's several days there, but our meeting will barely have been 2 weeks prior, so that will be very, very close. The 15th, if you want to look at in November, the 15th is a potential. The 22nd is a little close to Thanksgiving week. Some people start exiting at that point. So that, and then the 27th, which again looks empty, is right before Thanksgiving. That would be a problematic day. Plus, the library does close early that day for one of. So December, again, that's where, so we have potentials on Fridays or Mondays. October 24th, right? Yeah.
Okay. And that would be like a 5 o'clock, like it has been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that we, I think it was like a November, what was, can you go back to November real quick?
I can. Okay, so we're in November at this point.
So it was November 15th.
Yes. And so that would be almost, that would be about a month because it would be the.
That's probably fine. Fridays are always a little iffy for me since I have base on the weekends. But generally speaking, the base, I have to go on the first weekend or the second weekend of the month. It's very rarely I have to go on the third unless there's a special, you know, situation. I can tell you pretty quickly. I have the schedule on my phone, which unfortunately is not on me.
Okay, so that would be the third Friday of the month.
And that should be fine for me.
That still leaves you almost 2 months without a meeting. When you meet till January.
Mm-hmm. So then December, can we go back to December?
Yeah.
So I think it was like the 9th or the 13th, I think would be the best.
I'm okay with doing a Monday on the 9th.
Sure.
I think that would be a good kind of halfway point.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, then if there are any other things, then you contact either me or the chair, and that would be November
9th. December 9th.
December.
So November 15th.
15, okay.
Yeah. November 15th, December 9th, or December 13th.
Those are the 3 dates.
Those are like the 3 dates, yeah.
I like the 9th, and 15th should be fine. I'll find out and tell you as soon as I can.
Are you guys all good with the 9th?
Or December?
Yeah, December 9th.
December 9th is fine. It's a Monday. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then did we choose a November date? I'm sorry.
15 is tentative.
But what,
so we're only doing one meeting?
A combined November.
We're
combine
we're not going to do two?
Nope.
No.
Oh, we're only doing one.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Okay.
Let's do the 9th.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll do October 24th, and then we'll meet again December 9th.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we usually, we combine the November, December, so there's not just for the holidays.
I understand.
A lot easier.
Yeah.
No, that's perfect. That works for me.
Okay, so December 9th.
Sounds good.
Okay. I think that's it for me. Anybody else? Okay, then we'll move on to item 8, public comment. If anybody from the public wants to come forward, you may do so at this time. Seeing none, we'll move on to adjournment. I'll entertain a motion.
I move to adjourn.
We're adjourned.
I'll second.
We're adjourned.
I'll second.
Adjourned.